the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kate Murray, joined in the studio by Craig Burley. And a little later on, we will also be hearing from Stevie Nichol. But we want to get straight to it. Ralf Rangnick taking charge of his first media session, the press conference ahead of the game against Crystal Palace, now that he is interim Manchester United coach. And in it, he addressed some of the issues that he wanted to fix at the club.
I think it's pretty obvious that the team have abundant talent, young talented players, but also enough experienced players in the squad. But I mean, the major target for me in the next couple of weeks is just to bring more balance into the team. Even yesterday, we conceded 2 goals. We needed 3 goals in the end to win the game. And if you look at the total goals, number of goals conceded, it's almost two on average per game, and this is just too much. So this is my approach to help the team to get more balance, to get more control on the game. And yesterday's game, I mean, it was exciting for the fans, but even for myself as the future coach, those are not the kind of games that you need every day, because in football, for me, it's to minimize the coincidence factor and to have control and gain control on the game. And this is in football what it's about. And this is my approach. I will try to help these outstanding, talented players to try and get and keep the way away from their own goal.
Well, we now welcome in Stevie Nichol to the show. And we've just heard Ralf Rangnick talking about the goals conceded for Manchester United. You have to wonder, Craig, if he had anything to say to David De Gea after the first goal against Arsenal.
Well, well, they got away with it. But, yeah, I think start from the back is the normal sort of terminology. And yeah, first and foremost, try and make sure your goalkeeper's not as soft as a sponge. Because, you know, he should pick himself up there, not lie rolling about with his back to goal. You know, he could have threw his hat on it if he'd have got himself off the ground. Wasn't that bad an injury. Didn't have a broken leg. Yeah, he twisted his ankle. So what? I mean, this was pathetic. But as I say, it didn't cost him. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, you got to pick yourself up until that play is finished. Unless you're in such a state, somebody's trod on him. I mean, spare me, honestly. So this was a correct call, obviously, and but I don't think that's his biggest problem. Like, that's the talk to work about one at the moment, because it was quite an interesting incident yesterday, shall we say. But I think get the back four, first and foremost. He talked about the goals. Needs Varane fit, needs Shaw fit. What's he going to do in the right-back position when Wan-Bissaka is available? And I think he is, because he's not been great. How is he going to work the units? Because even in that game yesterday, and I was listening to the commentary, and it was right, was for long periods, and particularly in the first half, the front three, or front players, were kind of half-pressing, but not really. The midfield were in no-man's land, and the back line were dropping off. There was so much space between. There's no real unity in that side. There's no real compression in that side. And I think, first and foremost, that's what he's got to work on. He's got to work on the shape of the team, and how he wants to make sure the spaces for guys to play again, play around them, are not there. We saw, you know, Smith Rowe and one or two others, Odegaard getting into some decent areas in the first half. Lots to work on, but he's got enough players there to work on this, just not enough to challenge Liverpool, City and Chelsea.
Stevie, how big a job is that for Rangnick to improve the United defence?
That's a huge job. I would suggest right now that the individuals they have, and certainly the way the individuals are playing, is it a job that you can do? I guess for me the question is, how does he shore up the defence? Does he start at the back, or does he start at the front? You know, the two best teams to defend from the front are City and Liverpool. Chelsea do it as well, but they don't do it quite as high. And then you've got Manchester United, who, well, we're, up until now, we're not sure what they do. So he really does have a choice to make here. Does he defend from the front, or does he actually just go and block the back line up and then start growing from there? That's what he has to do. I would suggest you do it from the front.
This Palace game is going to be interesting, because literally he's just in the door, isn't he? I mean, he's been announced as being the COVID restrictions and the visa hurdle to get over and all that. But I'd imagine he's had probably now 48 hours on the training ground, right? Or, nah, 2 days. He's not been on the training ground for 40 hours.
Yeah.
He's had 2 days on the training ground. To go back to what Stevie was saying, it's going to be interesting to see if there's anything short-term that's changed. I remember when, and this is a long time ago, it seems like it, when Klopp came to Liverpool. Right, now this was a long, drawn-out job. It didn't happen straight away. But I never forget, because there was so much hype about him coming in, their first game under Klopp was at White Hart Lane against Tottenham. And Liverpool that day came out and they pressed and they harassed and they harried and they just tried to smother Spurs. And it was clear that he'd said, this is what I want to do. Now, it took a long time and several changes and new players coming in, a lot of players going to implement that. But it was clear from the offset as this was what it was going to be about. I wonder what we'll see from Rannick's Man United, even though he's just in there. But I wonder if we'll see anything, any glimpse in the Palace game that says, right, this is what he's going to try and do. Because they're going to have to do some. Carrick won 3 games, I get that. But it was pretty much of a muchness. It was similar type of performances, same kind of mistakes, getting the odd bit of luck in one or two games with some mistakes being made, scoring goals, but conceding goals. What's Rannick's DNA? Are we going to see something against Palace, even for 10, 15 minutes? It just says, right, that's what he's going to do.
Do you think, Stevie, that Maguire's form could be a concern for Rangnick coming into this?
Yeah, but I think he'll get a chance to recover it. He has been struggling for quite a period of time now, but he has shown previously that he can be a solid part of any defence. And at times, he's looked like the real leader at the back. For me, it always goes straight back to Ronaldo, because I'm with Craig. I think he has to make some sort of statement. He can't just go in and just let things roll the way they have been. He has to do something drastic, and that means going and closing. And if you're going to do that, you can't play Ronaldo. You can't. You know, Ronaldo clearly doesn't have the pace and the stamina over a length of run now that he used to have, because he's getting old. It happens to everybody, and it's natural. So what chance have you got of Ronaldo, when he gets the ball in the box like he did the other day on two occasions, where he's sharp and he's ready and he's got the legs to take the chances? Because if you're going to go closing down from the top and from the get-go and do it as often as you can, Ronaldo's going to be done after an hour, easy. And even if he's not, he might just lose that half a yard that he needs at his age to put the ball in the back of the net. So it's a huge goal.
Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Ronaldo and his role in this pressing style of Ralf Rangnick. This is what the coach had to say about the player. You always have to adapt your style or your idea of football to the players you have available, not vice versa. Having seen Cristiano yesterday in the second half at the age of 36, an amazing top professional at his age, I've never seen a player who is still that physically fit. He's still a player who can easily make the difference. So that's all very nice what he said about him. Is he going to try and adapt the team to him?
He scored 2 goals again against Arsenal after being left out against Chelsea, two of their biggest rivals over the last 20 years. But as Stevie said, and particularly with this game being at home, you know, there's going to be, I don't know how many, 70,000 there. Who's Ralf Rangnick? A lot of these United fans might have been saying, not them all, but a lot of them might have been saying, who's Ralf Rangnick? He hasn't managed Barcelona, hasn't managed Real Madrid, Juventus. You know, this big reading about a reputation. We're not asking who Ralf Rangnick is. We know he's got a good, great reputation as a coach, but he hasn't managed the real elite football clubs. So why, in those United fans' eyes, should he be managing their club? And so to that, what Stevie was saying off the back of what I was saying, there has to be something tangible when they pat their backsides on the Old Trafford seats on Sunday, say, right, what's the Ralf Rangnick brigade giving us? What's going to be different here? And one, leaving that guy out after the 2 goals and his return would be a huge decision, but it'd be one that says, don't care, doing it my way. Or two, he puts them in and they still try and play this pressing game and it doesn't work, and then he's got a decision to make. It's not easy. right? But he's not there to make friends. He's there to get results, results that have been hard to come by a guy who was in charge that shouldn't have been there, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So this is not about being Ronaldo's friend. This is not about appeasing Ed Woodward on the board in terms of his wages. This is about appeasing the fans and the board of directors in terms of results and putting their confidence in him to come in, one, manage the team for the 6 month or so period, and two, whilst that's going on, advise about the structure of the football club and potential managers going forward whilst trying to fight for that top four. That's what they're trying to do. They're not in a title race, unless, barring miracle, they win every game between now and the end of the season. But I think what's going to be the new look Man United at Old Trafford on Sunday, there has to be something different to the mundane, slow, neither here nor there, not pressing, not sitting back, all a bit slow. That's not going to cut it under this manager, and it shouldn't cut it with these fans.
Do you agree with that, Stevie?
100%. 100%, and it really is, you know, just to double down on what Craig's saying. You know, when you're the manager, the head coach, whatever your title is, the only thing that should be in your mind is getting the result. And if that means that 9 of the players that started don't start, that's what you have to do. It doesn't make a difference what the name on the back of the jersey is. Your responsibility is to the whole club. Supporters, players, everybody. Yeah, that's where your loyalty is, and you have to do what you think is the best thing that's going to get results. And if that means Ronaldo sits or Fernandes or Maguire or anybody else, and you have to bunker in, whatever it takes, that's what you do. And we'll find out pretty soon what Ranić's like. And I think it is important that you look at his CV and you don't see a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. I think that's important. I think there is a difference between your top, top players and your really good players or some young guys, particularly at Borussia Dortmund, Hoffenheim, these places that he's been, where it's young guys coming through who will just run through brick walls for you and won't actually think too much about it. He's walking into a dressing room that's got a lot of experienced pros. Some coming to the end of their career, like Ronaldo. So, this is a test for him.
And so, what he can really do without is come the end of the season when it all shakes down. Wherever it is, they finish in the league and the cups and all, and they're still in the Champions League and they're in the knockout stages. What he cannot have is be in a position where there's people out there saying, "Well, might as well have stuck with Solskjaer." Do you know what I mean? He needs to come in and leave his stamp on it. So at the end of the year, his stamp is not, was I Cristiano Ronaldo or Paul Pogba's best friend? It was, what did I change? What did I do? How did I implement something for Man United that was tangible for them getting back in amongst where they should be? And that, as Stevie said, is not just, I mean, if you can make friends when you're going along doing these jobs, then great. But ultimately, you know, I've played in big dressing rooms. Stevie's played and managed in them. He can't keep everybody happy. People have to sit on the bench.
So just quickly, even if they were to finish outside the top four, if the fans see some change,
they can't finish outside. They cannot finish outside the top four with the rest of the teams I've seen.
Even if they see a difference in the style of play and positive things going forward, there's no way they can finish outside the top four.
Well, if they see positive things and a good style of play, they'll finish in the top four. Because if you watch Tottenham, Arsenal have improved, but they're still a little bit weak. Who else? Who else? So, it should not be difficult for Manchester United to get in that fourth spot when you look at the rest. With that playing squad, it would be failure for him if he doesn't get above the Tottenhams and the Arsenals of this world when you look at their squads.
Right, it's going to be fascinating to see it all play out, and the era under Ralf Rangnick as interim Manchester United coach gets underway this weekend against Crystal Palace. This is the upcoming Premier League schedule. West Ham against Chelsea kicking things off, also worth a look. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Friday night action in the Bundesliga. Union Berlin taking on Leipzig, and the goal scoring would start early in this game. Union Berlin taking an early lead in the 6th minute through Taiwo Awoniyi.
Yeah, and I think once they play the ball back there, you've got to try and squeeze out as a defence as far as you can. They don't. That allows the ball to be knocked down and a simple tap-in.
Not too much longer later, though, there would be an equaliser, Christopher Nkunku.
Well, even he didn't think it was going in when he hit it. You could see his reaction. When he sees it hits the back of the net, he's as surprised as anybody. I think the keeper's surprised to see a ball coming his way. Big mistake.
But just before the hour mark, there would be another goal for Union Berlin.
Yeah, worked it on the training ground, comes round the back, but then gets a big slicey look. But it's not good defending the set piece from RB Leipzig.
No, and it was Baumgartl with the goal there. And a win for Union puts them 5 points clear of their rivals, who are now 7 points down on their previous lowest total after 14 Bundesliga match days. As we now welcome in Archie Rintut to look ahead to a big weekend in the Bundesliga, but look back on this one as well. Welcome in, Archie. What more can you tell us about this game tonight?
The possession tells you nothing about how a game of football goes, because in the words of the RB Leipzig CEO, Oliver Mintzlaff, it was a highly deserved win for Union Berlin, and it was a desolate and catastrophic performance from his team. Now, I would say those words are very much aimed both at the team, but also at Jesse Marsch. And even though he wasn't on the touchline tonight, I would be worrying for my job if I was him. He's out with COVID right now. His neighbour nearly bailed him out of the game, that is, because Christopher Nkunku is his neighbour back in Leipzig. But he's in real trouble, because that's their third defeat on the spin. But it's not just the fact that they've lost 3 games in a row. It's the manner of the defeat. The goals you saw there, you didn't see the wave after wave of counterattack that Leipzig failed to repel. As they say in Germany, it's something to do with their Restverteidigung, which is a word you hear more and more these days, and it's to do with how you defend on the counterattack. And their structure there just kept on being broken down. But there were just moments of indiscipline as well. I think back to Benjamin Henrichs coming off and walking straight down the tunnel, Nnedi Mukiele tying his shoelace as Union are on the attack. These are things which, in isolation, you think, okay. But the more and more they add up together, it was a ragged display. And I think Jesse Marsch is in trouble.
Yeah, Jesse Marsch on the hot seat after Leipzig's recent run of results. They're down in 8th right now, and many expected them to be challenging the top two this season. Just a point between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. Perfect time then for Der Klassiker, the big game this weekend in the Bundesliga. Just a reminder of what happened in the Ballon d'Or's final results. Lionel Messi scooping his 7th award and Lewandowski missing out, coming 2nd in the standings. It's been something of a controversy as we now welcome in Archie Rintut. What's the reaction been in Germany to this, Archie?
I think there's disappointment for sure. You saw that from the Bayern squads. Lothar Matthäus saying that he doesn't understand football anymore. I would say my own personal reaction is he did deserve it, but I'm not surprised, because This is how it works, and it's voted for by 180 countries. And I think part of the problem is Bundesliga visibility in comparison to the other leagues. And as well, it is something of a popularity contest, and Lionel Messi is more popular than Robert Lewandowski. I do think on a more serious note, it's a problematic for Bayern when it comes to attracting new players to the club in the future, because you want to be saying that if you come here, not only are you going to be winning the top competitions in the world, you're also going to be a star. And when Robert Lewandowski breaks what was viewed here as the unbreakable record last season, beating Gerd Müller's 40 goals in a Bundesliga season, even though he didn't even play 34 games. I think it says something for how everyone else outside of Germany views Germany a little bit as well, from personal experience of hearing how people talk about Germany, but also how people see the Bundesliga.
Well, don't worry. Yeah. We did our own ESPN FC Ballon d'Or. Everybody had to give their top five players. They put right. all the results into the top 10.
Yep.
And Lewandowski comes out on top with our pundits' picks.
Yep, it was an anonymous pick. It was our pundits, myself included, but it was anonymous.
And the host.
So we don't know who, yeah, and the host. This was the one Ballon d'Or that got me annoyed. I know we're going to talk about the Clásica. It's a big game, big Bundesliga game on ESPN this weekend. But I actually got annoyed about something that I couldn't really give a stuff about, like most people. But to go back to Archie's point, and this was the point I was making on the show, it's not just Bayern dominate the Bundesliga and he's a great player and they're a great team and they generally have pilfered the Lewandowskis from Borussia Dortmund and all these other players. It was a 50-year record with some of the greatest strikers on the planet have plied their trade in Germany and haven't got close. That's kind of why I couldn't get my head around it, but as Archie said, it's a popularity contest. Hopefully they don't even have it next year. I'm sure they will. They'll continue it. But, I think it's intriguing just for the weekend that, you know, this is a huge game, getting back to the game off the Ballon d'Or. Erling Haaland's fitness, that's a concern. Marco Rose's got some injury problems and had some injury problems. Some players coming back, are they back in time? We know Nagelsmann hasn't got a full squad, but we also know the last five games, Bayern Munich have won them all. And we also know they've lost, two or three out of the last five, something like that. Borussia Dortmund, including the Champions League game a few days ago, where they were dominated by Ajax. That big game, so I say so early in the season, but obviously before Christmas. It's such a big game because Dortmund are still in there. You know, they're still neck and neck with Bayern, and they're the only team that looks anywhere capable. Leverkusen have been in the goals and they look bright to start with, but they've fallen off the pace, and so there is only one team at this moment that's going to potentially trouble Bayern, and it's Borussia Dortmund.
And is there a feeling, because of what Craig's saying there, Archie, about the absences, particularly in the Bayern Munich side, that maybe gives Dortmund a bit more of a chance this time around?
It's not just the absences, it's also what's been going on in the background. The whole sideshow here, what went on at the club's annual general meeting last week, and the whole furore over the Qatar Airways sponsorship, but also the Ballon d'Or, Robert Lewandowski not receiving it. And then added to that, Joshua Kimmich coming down with COVID, having not been vaccinated. All of these other topics have kind of snowballed into Bayern having to field questions about other things other than football. And you've seen it also in the performances recently. The 2-1 defeat to Augsburg sticks out, but also against Freiburg, against Arminia Bielefeld, against Dynamo Kiev. They won those games, but they weren't all that convincing. Now, the last time Fürth played second in the Bundesliga, Bayern were 5-0 up inside 40 minutes. I don't think that's going to happen tomorrow. But Dortmund have a real point to prove because they've lost their last six competitive meetings even against Bayern. And it's difficult to really pick out an identity that Marco Rose has imprinted onto this side. They have become more consistent in the way that they play, but at the same time, they've not really hit the same heights that they used to. Maybe it's a healthier long-term approach, but they've appear very reliant on Erling Haaland. They need to win this to keep hopes of a title race alive, but also particularly after their disappointment in the Champions League.
But again, I go back to this, the basis for Dortmund to put any kind of challenge over the course of the season, and this might sound strange, isn't so much Erling Haaland and the Giorenos, who's been now injured, and the Marco Reus. These are all that will happen for them, I would imagine. It's the other end. Continues to be the other end. They haven't hardly kept a clean sheet. Even if it's just one goal, it doesn't matter. Most of these big teams, and Bayern have been pretty similar, it has to say, but they've got a track record. Most of these big teams, whatever league you look at, big leagues in Europe, the sides, you know, look at, let's take the Premier League. City, Liverpool have defensively been a little iffy, but City and Chelsea pride themselves, strong back fours. That's first and foremost is what Dortmund have to solve if they're going to go all the way through to the end of the season. Just scoring goals isn't going to get you through all the way to the end of the season and challenge Bayern. It has to be at some point they're going to have to make sure that, and I know they've had injuries, and I know they've got players coming back, but they're going to have to make that more solid long-term. Otherwise, he's going to go the same way as almost every other Borussia Dortmund coach over the long-term.
What's your prediction then, Archie, for this one tomorrow?
I'm going to plant myself on the fence and go 2-2.
2-2. Would you care to get off the fence on this one, Craig?
All right, just because I want to see... I don't think Bayern, as Archie said, have been convincing either. I'm going to go for the first time, and Archie said it's six. I only went back five games in my... I'm going to go for a Dortmund win at home.
Oh, well. And with what you were saying, with goals being leaked at both sides, it could be a very exciting game. It usually is when these two sides face off. We thank Archie Rintop for joining us. We take a look at the upcoming Bundesliga schedule this weekend. All of these games available on ESPN+. But, of course, the big one is Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a big weekend ahead in La Liga. Barcelona taking on Betis, Real Sociedad against Real Madrid. Real Madrid leaders, Real Sociedad looking to get back up there. Two top four teams and a brilliant clash ahead in the Basque Country. That game coming up, and ahead of it, Alexis Nunez is in San Sebastian to tell us a bit more about it. She's also finding out that rainfall is abundant in these parts. But Alexis, welcome in. I heard you had yourself a little fun at the media day today.
Yes, Kay, I definitely found out that there is a lot of rain here. It reminds me a lot of Manchester in the UK because it is windy, it is cold, and it is very, very wet. But beautiful, beautiful city is San Sebastian. And you know, I braved all these conditions to go to the media day for Real Sociedad. I got to speak to two Alexes, Alex Solaroff and Alex Isak, about pretty much how since the departure of two very big names that we know well, the league kind of feels a bit more open. Look, rain's still falling on me. And also the fact that they have been keeping pace with Real Madrid, not just in the league table, but as a club on a whole.
I think has something to do with that Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi are not here, of course. And then you lose a couple of goals. I think that's self-explanatory. And then I think, yeah, you can see the teams around Real Madrid and Barcelona are getting better and better. So it's more even competition. I think now, lately, Real Madrid has been really, really good. So hopefully we can, yeah, take 3 points away from them, not let them get away with the momentum and keep going. As you said, I think it's more open this year, and hopefully we can be there and compete.
In terms of players there, we talk about Benzema, who's just has the experience and, of course, the quality. Vini Jr. has been outstanding. How do you, you know, prepare for those? Do you kind of target them, or do you just kind of see them as everyone else?
I think we are aware, of course. The qualities, everybody's aware of them, to be honest. I think at the same time, if we give them too much respect, if we give them too much attention, I think because they have a lot of confidence right now, they will go straight to the guy in front of them. I think we need to treat them as the best is to treat them as every other player, and keep a little eye on them, but nothing special. And then, of course, football, luckily, it's 11 players. So I think we have a chance.
All right, Alex, thanks so much for talking with us. Big match day coming up, Real Madrid. What are your feelings going into this match? Do you kind of look at it as a cup final, or do you just treat it as another league game?
No, it's another league game for us. We have to go in with the mentality to win the game and try to play good and play our game, and that's what we're going to do, see it as a normal game.
One of the things that you do have in your corner is home advantage. What kind of, you know, atmosphere? I've yet to be at a home match here in San Sebastian, so what can we expect?
No, the stadium is going to be full, so it's going to be a very good atmosphere, and of course that's going to be an advantage for us, but of course we're playing a very strong opponent, so that won't be enough. We have to play a good game to get points.
Alex Sorloth and Alex Isak right there ahead of what promises to be a pretty exciting game up against Real Madrid. I mean, the town has been buzzing despite the weather. The moment I landed, the taxi driver that picked me up immediately without even knowing that I work in football, he said, well, you came at the perfect time because my team, Real Sociedad, are expecting the big Real Madrid this weekend. And I said, well, funny you should say that. And one of the great things, I suppose, about traveling throughout this La Liga season and learning about different things is that there's so many more rivalries, and finding out exactly what makes these rivalries tick, because usually when we think La Liga, you think El Clasico, but I'm learning that that's not necessarily the biggest rivalry. It's probably the most well-known rivalry, but here in the Basque country, the last thing you want to do is call anybody Spanish. They do not consider themselves Spanish. They say they are from the Basque country. They even have their own language, and it's actually the oldest language in Europe that's still being used, and nobody even knows where it derived from, really, because it's the only language in Europe that actually is not derived from Latin, and they feel like the Spanish back in the day, you know, politically tried to wipe out their culture. So if it's one way that they can get back at them, it is in football. And Real Sociedad pretty much stands for everything the Basque country stands for, and Real Madrid stands for everything Spain and Spanish culture stands for. I mean, it's in their name alone. It stands for Regal Madrid, you know, or Royal Madrid. So I think that's going to be a pretty feisty atmosphere. They've already said that they do want to get the better of them, and this season, with them feeling that it could be more of an open season, they definitely are going to take it to them.
And Alexis, you mentioned rivalry. It's always interesting when it comes to the youth academies up in the Basque Country, because obviously Athletic de Bilbao want to get the best young players in their academy. Real Sociedad are known for developing the players that they do, currently one of the most productive systems in Spain. You had a tour there, right?
Yeah, exactly. We actually had a private tour of the facilities there. It was pretty exciting and got to see exactly how this academy works. I mean, when we think of La Liga and we think of academies, you always think of La Masia, which is Barcelona, who are responsible for some of the biggest names that we know in football today. But Real Sociedad made it known that they do their academy their own way. The usual academies around the country scout players from 8, 9 years old, but Real Sociedad refused to take players until they're 13 years old, because they say they want to make sure that they know of the sacrifice that they're going to have to make if they want to be a professional footballer. And another interesting thing that they showed us is the fact that the training ground or the facilities have classrooms, actual classrooms, because they actually do have classes there for the students or the footballers, whatever you want to call them, because they do both. And the most requested subject is English. They want all of them to learn how to speak English as well. So that's probably 3 languages that they are learning. Plus they do mathematics, physics, chemistry, pretty much everything I failed in high school. And they're just doing it while pursuing a professional football career. So they're definitely trying to build this very homey kind of club atmosphere and attract more people to go to their academy Miami and also attract probably some big name players, because as you said, it's a brilliant city to live in. You've got the mountain, you've got the sea, and probably attract some more, you know, players that could help them close that gap or probably get the better of the likes of Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid as well.
Alexis, it's been great to hear from you. We hope you can stay dry, and we look forward to hearing more from you tomorrow for this big game. A lot to talk about with Real Madrid.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe if they start attracting better players, they'll have a better team.
I mean, they've got Xabi Alonso, so maybe that's a bit of a pull.
And they can start having some... They might think it's a big rivalry, but really and truly, it isn't really a rivalry in terms of success. So, you know, they had a chance a couple of weeks ago. And I love all these stories, they're great. Yeah, we do this and we do that. Well, results, right? We're in the results business. Results. Nice place to live. Results. Mountains. Results. A couple of weeks ago, they had a chance. These things are all nice, but at the end of the day, we're in this business. A couple of weeks ago, they had a chance, at home, by the way, where these players are giving the cliches out. Isaac said, yeah, it was going to be a full house. It's going to be a great atmosphere. Yeah, tell me something new. What are you going to do on the field? A couple of weeks ago, Valencia at home, full house, great atmosphere, poor performance, 0-0. Didn't offer a lot, didn't really look like they were going to win the game. Real Madrid will give them a chance to play. Real Madrid are not a side that tries to smother teams. They're a bit of an older side with a mix of some of the younger guys. We think Ancelotti, talking to Sed and during the week and their results, will probably go with that old guard again, even though there's a lot of games. That's kind of the way we think they're going to go. So they're not going to pressure teams. They're not going to try and smother you from the get-go. They'll let you play. But Valencia, in a sense, let Real Sociedad play when they could have gone top of the league that day and they were poor. If they lose this game tomorrow, they're going to be, I think it is, 9 or 10 points behind. So it's a big game for them, and it's a game that I don't really see them being able to lift themselves to Real Madrid's standard, which is not brilliant.
Do you think there could be some tiredness, though? You just mentioned the old guard. We know that Carlo Ancelotti has been not so much refusing to rotate, but we know he doesn't like to too much.
No, but I think there will be tiredness, but I think that's negated somewhat by the fact they don't play this high-intensity game. It's not Liverpool or Man City we're watching. It's not this pressing. It's a kind of slower-paced game, and they've been creeping over the line. They did that. They had a comfortable win against Granada. Crept past Sevilla, and a game where Sevilla were dominant against them, and I would expect Real Sociedad potentially to have quite a bit of the ball. But they play more of a waiting game, and then with the balls to Vinicius Jr. and to Benzema, and then those balls over the top as teams get tired, has been effective for them.
So it's another Real Madrid win for you?
I think purely on the fact that they'll look to suck Real Sociedad in and then just wait for the moment. And that's how they've won games recently, without being brilliant, but just a piece of brilliance or two within a game has got the job done. And for that reason, I think we're looking at another, Real Madrid win.
Another big fixture.
In the mountains. In front of a full house.
Another big fixture this weekend is Barcelona taking on Real Betis. And Martin Einstein has been on the latest stop on his bicycle diaries, where he caught up with the on-loan player Héctor Bellerín at Real Betis, and they had a very interesting chat.
It's a great change to be here in Seville.
Yeah, I really needed it to like connect with my roots a little bit. And, you know, Betis gave me that opportunity, you know, and in a completely different way as well, because it was also my dad's team.
Did the pandemic had to do with your decision as well?
With all the time that I had sitting at home, just alone with my thoughts, it kind of changed the order of my priorities, what I wanted, not just in my job, but in my life.
Héctor Bellerín isn't your average footballer. He is a social rights activist, a shareholder at the world's first eco-friendly club, and he loves fashion. Arsenal, the club he joined when he was only 16, asked him to design their suits for the cup final last year.
Okay, I have to ask you for a piece of advice. Some people have criticized my way of dressing, my shirts especially, you know.
No way. With clothes, you either wear them or they wear you. And you're wearing it, and that's why it looks good. So it's all about the confidence.
Now you understand? Héctor says it.
So.
Hector, what would you bring from London to Seville? And what would you take with you to London?
I would bring from London over here the mentality that young people have, the creativity. And I would bring from Seville to London. And I think if I did it, every single person in London would be very grateful. And that is to bring the sun with me on a plane or something.
Bueno, ahí está tu casa. Did you use the engine on your bike?
I didn't use the engine, no. It has one.
Are you sure?
But I lowered it. I lowered it just for you. I wanted you to keep up.
You are a player that have different areas of interest. Fashion, design, photography, communication, environment. You don't get to see this in the football world. Why is that?
The reputation that football has a lot of the times true, and it's very toxic. It's a very toxic environment in a way of like how we have to be so mature, and we have to look a certain way, we have to act a certain way, we have to just stick to football. And you know, we get put in a box, and you cannot talk about politics, you cannot talk about anything. And I think slowly there's a lot of players are being able to express what they really like and who they really are.
Have you been touched by what Josh Cavallo has said, that he went and told the world he was gay?
For sure. Oh, I said to him, thank you. For me, something so normal, and it's not normalized at all in this industry. And it takes people like him that have the courage and have the willingness to truly change the world.
I say goodbye to Hector, convinced that we have a long way to go as a society. But with people like him leading the way, we are going in the right direction. This is the Bicycle Diaries. See you for the next journey.
Nice stuff from Martin Einstein once again. Barcelona looking to make it three in a row when they take on Real Betis. What a Saturday we've got for you in La Liga. And the match day continues right across until Monday when it wraps up with Getafe against Athletic. All of these games you'll be able to see on ESPN Plus. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of the show. But make sure you stick around because Stevie Nicol will be joining us to talk about...
He's giving us some culinary advice.
Some advice on overcooking spaghetti and what to put on top of a pizza. Will we take that advice? I doubt it.
No.
Welcome into Extra Time. We've got Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here with me. Yesterday, both of you were actually talked about in a would you rather style question.
Were we?
There were other parts to it, but it was would you rather have Craig as your therapist or Stevie as your spaghetti chef under the watchful eye of Gab Marcotti giving the instructions?
I would imagine it was Stevie as a spaghetti chef.
A lot of people were interested in Stevie as a spaghetti chef. And there is another question about Stevie's cooking here today, but we'll start with you.
Well, it's not difficult. I mean, he puts the spaghetti in.
And then after about 7 or 8 minutes, Gab shouts at him to get the spaghetti out of the damn water before he overcooks it.
It's not al dente enough.
Did you hear him? He put it in for 20 minutes, at least.
20 minutes, yeah, all like mushy.
Yeah.
There was also Frank reading his book, a chapter of his book. And
so, on yesterday's Extra Time. Yeah. Sounds great. I'm glad I never watched
Sounds
it.
Sounds great, yeah. You missed it, don't worry.
Yeah, I won't be going back to Luke. I won't be revisiting that one.
Frank reading a book. Yeah, and also Dan eating pineapple on a pizza in a restaurant with his shorts on. Yeah.
We need some new material.
Okay, there's a more serious question to kick things off tonight.
Not wrong with pineapple, by the way. On a pizza.
On a pizza, there is.
On a pizza?
No, there's not. Listen.
Oh, my God.
I can't remember his name right now.
Oh, my God.
But I believe it was a couple of years ago. Greatest pizza maker in the world made a pizza with pineapple on it and won the title. So don't tell me you don't put pineapple on
the pizza. The greatest pizza maker in the world.
I'll tell you what, I know about flying to the moon,
yes,
what you know about
pineapple
pizzas.
On his pizza.
You, honestly.
I'm telling you.
I bet it was a frozen
pizza. The
guy was on,
a
cooking
program.
It was on a cooking program last week. I was watching it with Elna and I'm telling you.
So is it he watches now?
He tries to make out
he watches cooking program, and yet he puts spaghetti in the boiling water for about 25 minutes.
Yes, Stevie, we know who we believe. All right, Craig.
I like it.
Well, no one else does. Craig, what should Arsenal do regarding Aubameyang and the future? Is Martinelli a long-term solution?
What, to replace Aubameyang? No. No. I see Martinelli as somebody who comes off the bench now and again. I know he started. He came off the bench in the last game I saw at the Emirates. I can't remember who it was for. And actually, Newcastle. He came on for Saka, I think, looked lively. Started in this game. He's quick, very, very quick. Talented, but I don't see him as a long-term solution for Aubameyang, no.
Would Stevie be interested in participating at a cooking contest?
Not if it was a serious cooking competition, no. You kidding? If I can use a microwave, then yeah.
So I guess that's a big
Let's cut these cooking questions out. He can't cook.
Right.
There's a reason his missus leaves him 21 meals frozen when she goes away for 3 weeks.
He can make beans on toast.
That's not, yeah.
Okay,
having trouble with his fried eggs last time.
Yeah, I remember that. Poor Stevie. It's a good job you've got Ellen and Stevie.
How can you be that daft?
What, to like pineapple on a pizza?
I'm with you.
Craig, if Manchester United gets it together now, do you think they can still squeeze into the top three and put themselves back in a good position for the title run?
What title run?
Three?
No. No, they're hedging the bets for the top four. No, unless Liverpool, City and Chelsea completely capitulate, all three of them, maybe one of them will fall away at some point, maybe, at best. No. I mean, they should get in the top four, as in fourth.
Yeah, but not the top three.
No.
It feels like that's another big fat no from you as well, Stevie Nicol.
Big zero, no chance. Nada. Anything you might throw in.
This is for both of you. What's the weirdest corner tactic you have used or played against in your playing days? I'll start with you, Craig.
Weirdest corner tactic? I don't think I've used any.
No?
I remember Dennis Wise kicking the corner flag at Hillsborough, actually, Stevie's old club. Stevie was, I think he'd left then. We played Sheffield Wednesday in the mid-90s, what, 96 maybe, and Wisey kicked a corner flag. But it wasn't a tactic. and then he realised he'd done it and the ball moved outside the quadrant. And because the corner flag hit the ball, basically. And then he tried to shield it because he couldn't play it again.
Right.
So it wasn't a tactic.
It wasn't a tactic?
No, it was just what you call making a mess of it.
It sounds like it. Stevie, have you had any weird corner tactics in your playing days?
Weird? No, nothing weird. Just sensible stuff, you know, making runs and coming in kind of going and running in behind late and somebody putting it in. Nothing strange.
Listen, you and Mariner, you and Paul must have had some ingenious corner plan at the revs, surely. Must have been something.
We did have a plan, actually. Get it in the box. How about that?
No shot corners allowed.
Hey, can imagine Paul. Hey, get it in there. Go and get bloody attack it.
Here's the thing, we had a guy that could deliver a ball in Steve Ralston. So when you're getting a free opportunity to deliver a great ball into in and around the penalty spot, then why would you not take it? Listen, I understand. If you don't have anybody who can deliver a ball, then you know what? You can start working on all your little routines and all your wee stepovers and all your nonsense. What was that one we used to do at Scotland, Craig? On the byline, you had to back heel it or something. I bet Brown did it with you.
Actually, we were, there was a goal scored the other couple of weeks ago in international football. Do you remember? You were working with me.
Was it right?
I said to you that was what they called that free
kick.
Yes,
you did, yeah.
Do you remember? Do you remember that? No, there was a free kick where they made, I can't use the words it used to be called.
Nor did you as
it
well.
It wasn't the Richard Goff one, was it?
It was the one where they went to take a free kick and both players went to take it at the same time and they messed it up as if they did it intentionally. And then one of them then quickly whipped it in whilst the defenders were sleeping. Italy did it.
Yes.
And it worked.
We did that. Yes. Gordon Strachan used to do it.
Yep. I was saying to Kay, we did that for Scotland for 10 years when I was there and it never worked once. We also did the one where the two defenders ran off the wall. So if there was a four or five man wall, the two defenders spun off, stood in the end of the wall either side, and then they spun off like in a half moon and went round the back because nobody was going to see them and they were going to sneak around the back and they were going to be unmarked and would whip the ball to the back post, bang, they'd head it in. That never worked either. 10 years.
So listen, with this in mind...
I actually saw that working, you know. That worked at Hampden Park, Scotland against England in the Stanley Rose Cup. I wasn't playing in a game. It was Richard Goff. I think it was Wee Strachan as well. Went up with somebody else, kidded on, they were both taking it. And of course the crowd fell for it. Here's a shock. And they all went, because they thought they'd messed it up. And as you said, it was big Richard Goff, did the old sneaky round the back. Strachan put it over his head and he headed it in. So it's actually worked once in 1,000.
Yeah, so I should have said it never worked once when I was there.
Not when you were there.
So that was the worst thing could have happened. Because as Stevie said, it worked maybe once.
And then to do with you being there?
No, it wasn't to do with me. but it worked once and then they tried it every time after that. You know what I mean? It was like, right we'll do, and we used to go, God's sake, we're not doing this again, are we? In training. It's never worked. Well, it worked in the Rouse Cup, 1989 or 88, whatever it was.
But still it was
Italy
there. Italy did it, yeah.
But they're Italy, they're good, see.
Wow.
The Italians, they put pineapple on pizza.
Yeah, and they end up having to go through to the playoffs to try and get to a World Cup. Listen, yesterday there was a really lovely question about your favourite training methods in a training session, like the things you most like doing during your training sessions, or was there one that really stuck out to you that you liked and remembered?
Yeah, playing eight-a-sides. Good touch.
Why are you laughing?
Well, I was actually surprised he said that because I've never met a footballer yet that doesn't like finishing.
Crossing and finishing.
Can't wait.
Games.
Crossing and finishing. Does it get any easier or any simpler or any more enjoyable? Especially when you hit the back of the net and then you can rub it in the goalie's face.
My favourite part of training was, the finishing was great. We used to play a lot of games. Yeah, when I say eight-a-sides, two-touch, one-touch, that kind of stuff. Crossing, finishing, blah, blah, blah. I didn't like the running part, obviously. Hated that.
Neither did Shaka, as we found out yesterday.
Yeah, but he's a goalie. chipping, the best part of training, if you could chip the goalkeeper in the shooting practice, that was the best part. Because goalkeepers got so annoyed when players tried. They didn't mind if you whipped it past them in the top corner. They didn't mind. They would take that. But when you try to chip them, oh boy. Shaq will tell you one day, they get real angry. Really angry.
I like that Stevie picked the easiest one because you probably won't be surprised to hear that Don Hutchison actually brought up one of the most challenging.
What?
It was when
adding up? Sums, maths? What was it, counting his fingers?
No, he was talking about when it would go like to 11 aside to 10 to 9.
11, 10, 9. How many is that? 5, Don. Oh,
The pitch till it was like 3 against 3, basically, on a full-size pitch. And he liked that.
3 against 3 on a pitch?
It would start with
that's
stupid.
Hold on.
That was his most
memorable. It started 11 v 11.
It would be like 11 v 11, stupid. And then they'd take a player out each time until it was like 3 against 3.
No. In all my days, I've never seen that been done.
Well, it was Don's favourite.
Don's favourite? Don, it's 3 against 3 now. How many is that?
If you could bring one Monday football rule to your playing days and implement it, would it be? If you could bring one modern-day football rule to your playing days and implement it, rule would it be and why? Easy, says Stevie.
Far. You have no idea the number of goals that were so clearly offside and the number of penalties that were given that were not even close to penalties, and so many decisions by complete and utter incompetence. I mean, you've got to remember, referees and linesmen weren't full-time when I started. And so, as you can imagine, I guess it's not their fault, but some of the things that were given or not given were just unbelievable. You talk about guessing. So I 100% would have VAR. 100%.
But you, Craig?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Because I remember going nuts at referees for penalty decisions that I knew players had conned. But that was just a referee had to make a call, you know what I mean, on somebody just falling over, you know, with a grappling or whatever. And then, go back to yesterday's game or whatever it was, the Arsenal, the goal from De Gea was on the ground. You know, it got cleaned up because VAR said to Martin Atkinson, look, one of his own players stood on him and he wasn't injured. I couldn't believe the questioning after the game, by the way, by reporters. Somebody said to some Man United players, do you think the goal should have stood? I'm like, what? Do you mean, if it legally, the goal was good. Of course it should have stood. Do you think the goal should have stood? No, we should have chopped it off because, we felt a bit sorry for David De Gea. I was lying down on the floor. We're not having a really good time at the moment. Just sacked Solskjaer, got a new manager in. People keep beating us. Yeah, I think they should have let us, just take the free kick. So VAR... even though VAR cleans these things up, we still have people asking stupid questions. But yeah, VAR is cleaning up a lot of these things.
And VAR, there you go, unanimous.
Should that goal have stood? It's not a question because it's not a debate. You know what I mean?
Right. But you both agreed on VAR, though.
What?
Being something that you'd implement.
Yeah, well, I couldn't think of anything else.
Yeah, well, you don't agree on pineapple on a pizza.
Well, clearly.
Yeah, and I side with you on that one, Craig.
Would he put pineapple on his shepherd's pie?
I'm going to get the evidence. That's
yeah,
right.
Go and get the evidence.
I'll find
the
out
greatest
who it is.
Pizza chef in the world. All right, then. Okay, anyway, thank you.
You took advice from him in a restaurant recently? You took advice from the
Oh, yeah, corn and the shepherd's pie. All right.
I can't believe you went out for a meal with your Italian other half and he had shepherd's pie.
I love all the English dishes.
What's that? Because Italian food's not good.
Well, Italian food's good, but we eat a lot of it.
All right.
And we got lots of English chocolate today, and he definitely likes that.
So he went for the shepherd's pie.
Yeah, I might bring some in.
So he really is. He's just he's a meat and tatties kind of guy.
Meat and tatties kind of guy. Anyway, thanks so much for your
questions. That's the Teesside coming out.
Teesside Agro. Chill today. Thanks so much for sending your questions in for Extra Time. Don't forget, tune in every single day for ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out electric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.